This is the Central Pittsburgh. I'm Kevin Gavin, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. The Pittsburgh region was impacted by many major news stories during 2013, from a breakthrough in the stalemate over funding for transportation infrastructure and mass transit to a police scandal and the election of a new mayor. And let's not forget about tens of thousands of people flocking to the riverfront to see a 40-foot duck. To get a perspective on the big news stories of the year, we've invited in WESA senior news editor Mark Neutbar. Mark, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Mark, I mentioned transportation off the top. That has to be one of the big stories for 2013. Why so?
Well, let's do a little bit of background on this, first of all. Almost immediately after taking office back in 2011, Governor Corbett knew that transportation was going to be an issue, so he put together a special commission that was going to review transportation issues in the state. Of course, they came back and said, well, you need more money, and they gave him a whole list of different ways that they could increase funding. The panel recommended tax increases, fee increases. They sent that off, and the members of the state legislature looked like they were ready to move on that. Let's go. But the governor just let it sit there on the table, didn't want to do anything with it at all. So fast forward to 2013, all of a sudden the governor is ready to talk about this. The House came up with a plan. The Senate came up with its own plan. And of course, as you might expect, those two plans were very different.
And the governor's total money was different from the Senate's, which was different from the House's package. Right?
Absolutely. So the debate begins. What should be in? What should be out? It was a year full of press conferences under crumbling bridges. People were showing up in front of PennDOT offices. Rural members were saying, look, we need more money for this and this, and it should not deal with public transportation. Of course, those in more populous areas were saying, we need public transportation money. So it went back and forth, and then finally in November, we got this breakthrough. We had a passage of, here's the number, a $2.4 billion package of tax increases and fees. Some of those increases include how the gasoline tax is put into place, hikes in fines if you are in a traffic violation, also a change in the cost of registering a car or getting a license. And of course, Kevin, the governor was quick to claim victory on this one.
Although it was delayed, as you mentioned, the governor had his advisory panel. They made recommendations, and the recommendations sort of sat for a while. Is this a political victory for the governor?
Well, I think the governor is looking to claim victory on this simply because some of his other top priorities were not successful, and they haven't been successful for years. And so that's part of this picture as well. Let me talk about that for just a few moments. He's very much into the idea of privatizing government functions. Of course, probably most notably, the lottery situation and the state liquor store system. Both of those efforts have been thwarted, it seems, at every turn for the governor. Just to refresh your memory, at the very end of 2012, the governor inked a deal with that British firm Camelot to run the state's lottery. They were moving forward on that, and then all of a sudden, we find out that the attorney general of the state believes that it is unconstitutional to have this type of legislation. So they start going back and forth. Everybody divides up into their camp. There's this certain group that doesn't want it privatized. They think that government employees should be doing this. Another group that is very much willing to back the governor on his efforts to privatize the lottery system. And then there are those who just don't want any expansion of gambling and fear that by doing this privatization, it will expand gambling. So that's going back and forth. We've been working on the extension of the bid offers. And I should say, Kevin, only one company ever even submitted a bid on this. So there's a lot to be said there.
I've noticed that some lawmakers are saying, because of the attorney general saying, no, you can't do this, this is illegal, that the proposals have changed so much that you need to rebid it all over again.
Yeah, there's very secretive negotiations, I think that's the best way to say it. We don't really know what's happening behind the scenes with this renegotiation of the deal. If I had to put any money down on it, I would say that this whole thing is going to get scrapped and somewhere along the line be brought up again. The other privatization issue that I mentioned was the liquor stores. Again, we had a couple of different versions. State Representative Mike Terzai of the North Hills was very much leading the charge on this, but simply cannot get the votes together to make this happen. He continues to say, well, the people are for it, and it's the union that's standing in the way. Others are saying that the people are very much against this, and they don't want to throw these doors open and just have liquor sales willy-nilly throughout the state.
It seems like a lot of the privatization proponents in terms of the liquor stores are having a difficult time answering those who say, okay, we agree there are problems. Let's modernize it, and here are some ways to modernize it to reach some of those consumers or meet some of their complaints.
Yeah, I think if you think back over the last few years, you've seen a lot of modernization within the stores, and maybe that is the answer. Maybe it's just these incremental changes. Pennsylvania is still sort of an outlier when it comes to the state controlling everything, but I think that we'll find that compromise, just like you said, Kevin, we're really not going to find an answer. We're really not going to have privatization, but we will just have this modernization.
Another big story that just sort of permeated the Pittsburgh media, permeated Pittsburgh period, was I think we can call it a scandal, at least in the police department, and the investigation of it touching the mayor's office. This still is not a story that has been completed, though.
No, I don't know when this will be completed. It probably will be long after the mayor is out of office. We entered 2013 with rumors that Police Chief Nate Harper may have been doing some side work. It kind of just grew out of there. Maybe he had some questionable dealings with things going on with the department budget. Maybe there were some questions about assignment practice. Over several months, details began to emerge about financial mismanagement, theft, maybe even misappropriation of funds throughout the Pittsburgh Police Bureau. It started to appear that there was this nice little slush fund that was being built, and the police chief was able to tap into that whenever he wanted. Now, Kevin, at some point, the federal government got involved in this. I'm not exactly sure where. That's all kind of hush-hush. But the mayor's office was then brought into the investigation. The mayor's bodyguard was very much center of this investigation. Senior secretary was called before a grand jury. That investigation was then extended to the management of the URA, maybe even looking at some renovations that were done to the mayor's private home. Was there a kickback on that? Was there a little wink and a nod and a bill that never really got paid? It's really hard to say exactly what happened. But fast forward, Police Chief Nate Harper is indicted. He's chased out of his job. Right now he's fighting to hopefully keep his pension. And then a short time after that, Mayor Luke Ravenstahl, who was up for re-election, abruptly says, that's it. I'm out. I'm not going to run again. He's had a very low profile ever since then.
And since he didn't run for re-election, we Pittsburghers have elected a new mayor. No big surprise in the primary. Bill Peduto was the favorite in the primary. Absolutely no surprise in the general election.
Yeah, no surprise in the general election for sure. But we knew it was going to be an interesting race in May no matter what, because Bill Peduto had already announced that he was going to leave his city council seat, a very comfortable seat for him. He could have been in there probably for life. Decided that he was going to, on this third bid for the mayor's office, step away from the council seat, concentrate just on being the mayoral candidate that he wanted to be. But then we also had Michael Lamb, who was talking about it. When Ravenstahl stepped out, all of a sudden, it seemed like anybody in the city was thinking about running. Everybody in the city, I should say. Bill Peduto was, of course, still in there. Jack Wagner decided to get in. Jake Wheatley. We heard from State Senator Jim Furlow. He was going to run all of a sudden. We heard from Council President Darlene Harris. Well, as that all shook out and people started to actually get their petitions in, we did come down to just four: Peduto, Wagner, Jake Wheatley, and the sort of wild card was community activist A.J. Richardson.
Bill Peduto has really been in the news a lot since his election. He's kept his name in the news through various announcements, different approach to hiring city workers, the non-union city workers. He's really kept his agenda moving forward, even though he's not in office yet.
Yeah, I think that's all part of this election story that is being told here, that Peduto ran from the very beginning on the I'm not your typical mayor. I'm not the guy that has been in this office for however many years. I'm going to do things differently. And right after that November election, immediately he names his cabinet that he had been putting together quietly behind the scenes. It looks very different from any cabinet that we've ever seen before, both in the names, in that we didn't know many of the names going into this, also in the racial makeup and also the male to female ratio. So a very much different group there. He's also rushing quickly to build bridges with the foundation community and with nonprofit organizations. And he's really looking, it seems, to clean house in the city and put his people in. But his people are not just his friends. It's people who have applied to this website that has been taking applications from all around the country.
This is Essential Pittsburgh. Kevin Gavin sitting in today for Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking about the top news stories in the Pittsburgh region during this year with WESA's senior news editor, Mark Newtbar. Mark, two prominent public names were in the news for reasons they did not want to be in the news.
Yeah, the Ori sisters. I think that's the best way to say it, because there's actually a third Ori involved here. Well, her name just was not as well known coming into it. Like many of the previous stories that we've talked about, it wasn't contained just in 2013, but it did come to a head last year. Also, far from being done as a news story. This started with an investigation, this time from the Allegheny County District Attorney's Office, on a rumor that just grew to include three members of the Ori family. The scene opens, if I might tell a story here, with an intern telling the DA's office that state employees in the office of State Senator Jane Ori were being asked to do some campaign work on state time and that state assets were being used to help with that same effort. Well, they continue to dig. They go back years and years and look at records and interview individuals, former interns, employees. And what they find is that this campaign work wasn't just limited to Jane Ori's campaign. It also included two campaigns for state Supreme Court Justice Jane Ori's sister, Joan Ori Melvin. The DA continued to do some more research, and he brought in that third sister, Janine Ori, who was running the office. He called her the mastermind of this whole operation. So, of course, Kevin, we go to trial, and the trial plays out, and it was just one drama after another. I don't mean to laugh in any way. These are lives that we're talking about, but the sisters all wanted separate trials, so that became something of a little bit of a circus. There was evidence tampering that was done so poorly that a judge said, quote, that Ray Charles could even see that the signature on it had been forged. They put it up on a big screen in the courtroom, and it was just absurd. It really was. Ori said that this is a witch hunt, that Mr. Zapologist has a personal vendetta against our family. But at the end of the day, the jury decided that these individuals, Jane, Joan, and Janine, were all guilty of the charges that were against them.
And one quick final note on that particular story. Joan Ori Melvin is still in the appeals process, though, and
Yeah, a little bit of an interesting sentence that was handed down among some of the other things that you would expect. She was supposed to have a picture of herself taken wearing handcuffs, and then she would have to sign an apology on that. And that just seemed to go a little bit above and beyond what a judge should be able to do. That and a whole bunch of other things are still being appealed, and it will continue to play out in 2014.
Healthcare, the ongoing battle between two giants in the healthcare industry, UPMC and Highmark, and that even continued this week as
Absolutely. Yeah, this week we were just hearing about this in Harrisburg. Highmark and UPMC were always competitors in that health insurance market here in southwestern Pennsylvania. But UPMC was also starting to buy up some hospitals throughout the region and creating what some were thinking what might become a monopoly in healthcare. There were a few hospitals, most notably West Penn and Allegheny General, that were trying to hold out. Their balance sheets were just abysmal, though. They should have been in the emergency room or in the intensive care unit at their own hospital. So along comes Highmark. They have millions of dollars in surplus. And I say surplus, Kevin, because they are a nonprofit organization. So that's not profits, it's surplus that they have sitting around. They decide to go into the healthcare provider business by purchasing those two hospitals and a few others in the region. Well, of course, UPMC doesn't like this idea because now they have a competitor not only competing for the healthcare insurance dollars, but also for the actual healthcare providing. And so UPMC says, well, when this deal that we have with you expires, Highmark, you will no longer have access to our doctors at in-network rates. So that sends thousands of people in southwestern Pennsylvania into a tizzy. What am I going to do? My doctors are all UPMC doctors, yet my health care comes through Highmark. The cancer treatment that I've been getting for years is at a UPMC facility. I don't want to change. So, of course, the politicians get involved here as well. So it's this business fight going on, a political struggle that's going on. There were some deals that were made to push this off to the end of 2014 when this deal actually expires. But the fight is hot and heavy. Just this week, Kevin, as you mentioned, we had a hearing in Harrisburg over a piece of legislation that would force UPMC and some other hospitals to take Highmark Insurance. And the fight just was ugly, and it will continue to be ugly. And if you turn on a radio or look at a billboard, you realize they're digging in.
This is going to be another story, or a major story again in 14.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to be talking about what's the solution.
Speaking of health care, the health care of many of our veterans was endangered. Some died, and that was due to a horrible outbreak of Legionnaire's disease in VA hospital.
Yeah, very sad and a potentially very troubling story. The basic facts, just like you said, an outbreak of Legionella at the Pittsburgh Veterans System in 2011 and 2012. 22 patients were sickened. 5 of them died. The reason why this is one of the biggest stories of 2013 is because it was this year that we started to deal with some of the lawsuits. We started to find out a little bit more about what happened. There was a federal investigation and allegations of cover-ups. But although many of those civil cases continue on, the federal case looks to be closed because the Justice Department has decided not to bring any charges against the Pittsburgh VA administrators. U.S. attorney did more than 30 interviews, reviewed thousands of documents, and came to the conclusion that there was no malfeasance at this point.
Pennsylvania, this coming year, and we'll be moving into the national spotlight over same-sex marriage, not long after the Supreme Court ruling regarding the nation's DOMA, did the sort of Pennsylvania marriage law come to the forefront.
Yeah, that law dates back to the 90s, and it stipulates that marriage is only between one man and one woman. And for a while, we were hearing all kinds of news and information about this because it was the subject of a court case claiming that the law is unconstitutional. The state attorney general said she wouldn't defend the state's law. So that means that the defense has fallen to the lawyers out of the governor's office. That suit was brought by a group of same-sex couples from across the state, including a few from western Pennsylvania. Now, before that court case could be resolved in any way, we had a court official on the other side of the state, an elected official from the other side of the state, who started to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. He was asked to stop by, of all organizations, the Pennsylvania Health Department. He said no. It went before a judge. The judge put a temporary injunction on that, and the elected official decided, okay, I will stop now at this point because I have a judge's order to do so. However, in the meantime, a few hundred licenses were already issued for those couples, and they've been finding mayors and judges that will perform their ceremony, most notably here in southwestern Pennsylvania. The mayor of Braddock, John Fetterman, has been performing those marriages.
Another one of those stories that's going to continue and percolate in 14.
Yeah, and I just don't know what the answer is going to be. This is, as you said, Kevin, going to thrust us into the national spotlight, and lawyers from both sides all across the country, I think, will be coming to town to file their amicus briefs.
A lot of heavy stories, heavy topics we've been talking about, but there were a lot of good, fun stories as well. Everything from the Pirates breaking that 20-year losing streak to a duck and knitting a bridge and the restoration of the fountain mark begins somewhere with
us. Yeah, let's go Bucks. Let's start with that one. I just have to – personal story. I moved to town in 1996 on the day that the team was bought by the McClatchys. I have lived here for many years and have never seen a winning season until this year. Now, I'm not a bandwagon guy. I didn't jump on and wear Bucko paraphernalia all the time, but it was just exciting. It was great to go walking down the street and hear people talking about the Pirates late in the season in an excited way. It was great just to see people coming around a team that they hadn't before, and I heard the broadcast coming out of cars on their radios, which I hadn't heard in years, Kevin.
That takes you back to the, quote, the olden days when the radios would have the ball games on. So that was a good example of just how popular the Pirates became during the 13 season.
People had to watch and listen, that's for sure. And you had to go across the river and see the duck. Yes, we had an inflatable duck, 20-foot-high inflatable duck.
40-foot.
I'm sorry, thank you.
Don't shortchange this big duck.
A 40-foot-high inflatable duck that nested at the point there for a few weeks. It was part of the Cultural Trust's Festival of Firsts, and it just took over everyone's imagination. I went down there, Kevin, with my daughter, and it was as if the regatta was on or there was going to be a fireworks show or something, and everybody was happy. Everybody was smiling and getting out of the way for each other to take a picture. And of course, Kevin, the other story that's a good news story, the Point State Park fountain was blowing off just the way it should be with a nice high spout. That work took many years to complete. So that's a great story. And of course, we knit the bridge.
Yes. Maybe it didn't attract quite as many people as the duck, but it was definitely more colorful than just the plain yellow duck.
That is true. Driving by the bridge and seeing the hugely knitted panels, the colorful panels that draped across the bridge, it was quite a sight to see. It brought together a lot of different communities to put those panels together. And we even did some wonderful stories here at WESA about some of the lesser-known groups that actually got together and did the knitting.
Mark Knutbar is WESA Senior News Editor. We're discussing the top news stories in 2013 in the Pittsburgh area. When we return, a look at some enterprising coverage by WESA from recidivism to domestic violence in rural communities. That's coming up on Essential Pittsburgh, 90.5 WESA.